You're a runner. From the starting line to the finish line, you know that every breath and every step is a gift. You train hard and always welcome a new challenge. When the training gets tough, you stay focused and committed to your goals. You are strong, healthy, fast. Now you are ready to take your training to the next level. Hey, endurance athletes, welcome to episode 27 of the Freedom to Run podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Hafes, and the goal of this podcast is to share inspiring and motivating stories that help us celebrate and appreciate our freedom to run, which is about knowing that every breath and every step that we take is a gift. When we are training for an upcoming race, it's easy to slip into a standard routine for our training program. But there are times when we should challenge the status quo and develop a training program that is customized to ourselves as endurance athletes. For example, it might be changing up the specific running workouts. It could also be adding in or replacing a workout with cross training. But it could also be blending strength training with the running specific workouts. And another way to push ourselves is to change up our nutrition. Sean Reed is one of these endurance athletes. He's not afraid to move away from conventional or mainstream thinking. Also known as the butter runner, Sean is a fat-adapted endurance athlete who likes to lift heavy things. He's created a training program that fits his personal interests, but still delivers the overall fitness and endurance he's looking for. In my conversation with Sean, we talk about nutrition, running, strength training, and so much more. And now, here's my conversation with Sean. Hey, Sean, thanks for joining me today.
No problem, man. Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me on. You know, it's a pleasure to get to talk to you.
I'm excited for our conversation. And to set the tone, tell us how this idea for the name Butter Runner came about. And along with that, just your background in running.
I really came from a diet first, exercise second, kind of in my journey of fitness and health. So I became very well versed, you know, in how fat, saturated fat isn't, you know, the devil it's meant out to be, and people are eating more fat and, you know, being fueled by fat, fat adapted. And then so, you know, I thought it'd be a cute play on words I thought butter runner to sound good. Instead of a better runner, I thought butter runner sounded good, and it would match up with my views on, you know, eating more of a fat-based diet. And my history with running, you know, I grew up a fat kid. Every time I would see someone running, I would think about, you know, how effortless they made it look and how fun it looked. And they just kind of looked like they were gliding through the air. But every time I would try to run, you know, I'd cramp up and I would just feel like I was going to throw up because, you know, I was an overweight kid. So I never really got into it until one time me and my friend, he brought up doing a 5K, and I was like, sure, let's do it. So I signed up. I was all ready for it. I started to train for it, and I kept telling him, I was like, oh, have you signed up for the 5K yet? And he's like, no, I'm going to get around to it soon. You know, my parents are going to pay for it, you know, different excuses. And then time came. He never signed up. I ran the 5K. You know, I fell in love. And the rest is really history. I've been just, you know, running for probably the past 4 years, and I haven't looked back.
That's so cool. And yeah, going from, yeah, like you said, the fat kid, times have changed, man. And to be now called the butter runner, and you say fat adapted, where yeah, you embrace fat in the just the whole overall realm of nutrition. A lot of people in today's culture, and especially the running community, I feel like would maybe kind of wonder how that could be, but explain that a little bit. When you say fat adapted to somebody who hasn't heard that or isn't familiar with it, what exactly are you referring to there?
Well, you know, in the whole, you know, paleo primal, you know, whole foods eating, corner of the diet sphere, there's a big movement where people, you know, are eating less carbs, the low carb movement, I suppose, where people are eating less carbs, eating more fat. And the whole premise is the human body was, you know, didn't evolve eating, you know, all of these processed foods, all of these processed carbs on a daily basis. having carbs really is the main staple of its of the diet for most of evolutionary history, and they ate a lot more fat. You know, the human body is great at storing fat as energy, and if you let it, it's very good at burning that fat as energy. When you're always eating carbohydrates, which spike insulin, which shut down fat burning. So if, like our 21st century diet, we're just always eating carbs, 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 raise spike in insulin, and we never give our body the chance to burn the fat. So over the years that we do this, our body just kind of shuts down its fat burning mechanisms and doesn't really readily access your fat as energy, which is what some would argue is one of the contributing factors of our obesity epidemic in the United States. So once you, if you, you know, lower your carbs, kind of boost your fat a little bit, allow your body to tap into those fat stores as energy, your body doesn't rely only on glucose at that point. So you can use that fat as fuel for, in my example, endurance activities.
Yeah, that's really good stuff because, yeah, as you mentioned, fat, it's a better source of energy than carbs. But so often in the marketing that runners see, it's that we need these gels, we need the goos, and we need all these blocks that are full of glucose, fructose, sucrose, whatever. And but when we switch that, what do you go to for in race? Because that's maybe one of an endurance athlete's main things, main concerns is, okay, what am I going to have during a race? What do you go to?
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely, that's been the mainstay for, you know, however long as there's been products for endurance athletes, it's always been, you know, the more sugar, the better, different combinations of sugars, you know, to get better energy. And, you know, I don't think there's not a place for that. I just did a two-hour trail half marathon yesterday. I had a couple goos on the trail. I think that there's a place for the sugar in when you need to do something of high intensity. Think of it as kind of like the nitrous fuel to your engine, where the fat is your regular gasoline. Use that for your everyday, you know, for your low your aerobic activity. But when you really need to jump up in intensity, you use sugar for that. As opposed to using sugar for everything, you're kind of letting fat take care of your lower intensity, and then you're really allowed to tap into your sugar stores and sugar for energy when you need it for that high burst of energy.
Sure. So instead of training your body to depend on it, and you're going through, yeah, this insulin spike and then that carb kind of cycle, you train your body to perform consistently on fats, but then plug in the carbs or the goos, the gels, whatever, very strategically when you need it, when you're in race, it sounds like, right?
Yeah. And what you find when you're not constantly bombarding your body with all the carbs and spiking your insulin, your body becomes more insulin sensitive. So when you do give it the carbs, it takes it as like a turbo boost and you use it very efficiently. So it really helps you out in when you need that burst of energy during the race or during a really hard workout.
Yeah, because your body reacts to it a lot better.
Yeah, you burn it much cleaner. You know, your body's ready for it. It's primed for it. You know, you're sensitive to it as opposed to when you're always having the carbs, your body just kind of, it's nothing new.
Sure, and you say with the fat adapted. So with that, the way I understand it is, you almost have to train your body or your body to adapt to this and burning fat as the fuel. How would somebody go about that? How quick can it happen? What are some of the things that somebody needs to do that is maybe following a traditional Western diet, eating a lot of carbs, processed carbs, grains, pastas, things like that, but wants to get fat adapted?
Yeah, you know, fat adapted is another one of these buzzwords that's going around, you know, paleo, keto, fat adapted. There isn't really any definitive point where you're either on one side of it, you're fat adapted, on the other side, you're not. But just the process of becoming fat adapted is just enhancing your body's ability to utilize its own fat stores as energy. So the most straightforward and probably the first step to doing any of that is just looking at your carb intake and usually lowering it. You know, some some endurance athletes, you know, recommendations for carb intake per day goes as high as I've seen 900 grams of carbs per day for some endurance athletes. Now, you know, maybe if you're running 170 miles a week in Africa, you know, their diets are very high. In Kenya, their diets are very high in carbohydrate. But for most people that aren't doing very high amounts of activity day in and day out, that carb intake is too high for them. They need to go, you know, drop it. The first step would be just dropping it down, you know, 50 grams a day. They're 400, you know, next day go down to 350, maybe hang out 350 for a day, go down to 300, and keep dropping it down until, you know, anywhere between 100, 150 is usually a good hangout point. And then you could experiment and see, you know, go up to maybe 200, see how you feel, go down to 100. There's people that even, you know, the ketosis goes in, you know, under 50. You know, it's just experimenting with how low of carbs you can go and then ramp up and see how you feel.
Yeah, there's some really good points there. And a couple years ago when I kind of did this, moving away from the processed carbs and big pasta meals that endurance athletes are kind of maybe forced to think, one of the things that I experienced is some headaches, minor headaches, but then also maybe a feeling of some pretty low energy levels at first. But once I got through that and I became fat adapted, I was a lot better. Is that something that is common?
Yeah, you know, especially when people going from a less nutrient dense diet, where they might already be deficient in minerals or vitamins, and they drop their carbs, what tends to happen is you lose some water weight, which also causes you to lose electrolytes. And usually when people get kind of a headache, what they call when you drop really low carbs, people like to call it the keto flu, trying to get into ketosis usually. It's usually a mineral, you know, potassium, sodium, magnesium. It's usually a mineral depletion problem. And that usually, if you supplement with that during those first, you know, week or two of really dropping your carbs, it usually really helps with that.
Sure. So it sounds like it's something that you really need to be ready for it. You need to monitor it and maybe even have somebody helping you along the way too, because there's a lot of stuff that's going on with our bodies and the
food. You know, I think that if you don't even need to drop, I think you really get the problem if you drop under 100 grams of carbs, you might start to get the headaches. But I think even someone going from 400 grams to 200 grams would see drastic improvement. And I don't think that would really cause that much discomfort other than, you know, maybe not being able to have your ice cream at night.
Yeah, that's going to put you over right there.
Which, you know, who knows, that might cause you enough discomfort on its own.
Yeah, you bet. You won't have that again. So let's talk after your 2-hour trail half marathon yesterday. You said it was yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah. After that, what was kind of your go-to recovery food?
Well, to be honest with you, it was a box of Krispy Kreme donuts.
Right.
Which I know goes against everything I've been saying, but, you know, when I'm I told myself, you know, I would focus completely on this race. I turned down some foods just because I was really focusing in on my training and my diet. And you know, after the race, I like to indulge, and me and my girlfriend and my mom went and got some Krispy Kreme donuts on our way back from the race.
And so one thing there, I totally get it, but that was a reward because there were weeks and weeks of discipline leading up to that. And so let me reframe that or rephrase
the question.
Well, now
let me answer that as the advice I give for someone to do it right.
Yeah. So let's say you did a tough tempo workout or something like that.
Right. So I would say that, you know, depending on your goals, if you're, you know, doing some HIIT workout to lose weight, maybe you're not doing it to train for your next marathon or 10K, then I would say to, you know, just have a regular meal. If you're training to recover for tomorrow's workout, I would say to have some carbs, maybe not right after, but maybe, you know, 90 minutes after, have 20 to 40 grams of carbs and equivalent protein and go on with your day. I wouldn't say that you needed to, you know, change that. I think I don't think you would need to add in any fat or something. I don't think you would need to change it as dissimilar from what a regular runner would do. A regular runner might, you know, do more carbs than that. I don't think you need 100 grams of carbs after your workout, but I definitely think that some carbs to refill the glycogen and boost your recovery for your next workout is definitely necessary.
Sure. So even if you are fat adapted and your body is using fat, it's still tapping into some glycogen stores. So you need to replenish those with the meal afterwards. Am I correct with that?
Yeah, 100%. I would say you would do not need to go, you know, like I said, as high, 500 plus grams total of your day, which would mean, you know, having 100 to 150 after your workout. I think that's way overblown, but I think, you know, some carbs, a little bit of carbs would definitely help.
And another kind of buzzword that's out there right now floating around is this idea of intermittent fasting. What are your thoughts there? Do you do any intermittent fasts while training?
Well, see, that's the key thing. It depends on if you're really training for something or if you're just kind of hanging around, just living life. If you're just kind of hanging around, don't have a real training goal, you know, it's very different than if you are doing a lot of work and have to have a large amount of calories for that day. If you're training and have a goal, then I would say it's probably not the best thing for you to do. You know, it just restricts the amount of time you have to refuel. But, you know, if you're more of like an overweight, if you have a little extra pounds, you know, maybe then you can put in some intermittent fasting. But if you're already a lean person, you need the extra time to get in some calories and stay in a anabolic state if you're doing a lot of running and just breaking down tissue.
Sure. So if you're in the middle of a marathon training cycle, probably not a good idea to mix in some intermittent fasting. But maybe if it's if you're just in an off-season kind of base building phase, it might be an all right idea then, right?
Yeah, 100%. You know, if you really want to experiment with it, check it out. I think it's great. You know, I drop in maybe 2 to 4 times a week on my easier days. Just push back your eating to, you know, noon or 1 or 2. You know, if I stop eating at 9 and go till 2, that gives me a great amount of time to fast.
And are you starting that next day with a coffee or a bulletproof coffee or anything like that? Or is it just water during that fasting period?
You know, I have played a lot around with bulletproof coffee. You know, I'm a big fan, you know, whether you're doing the actual branded bulletproof coffee or mixing in some butter and MCT oil into your coffee, I think it makes for a great meal replacement. Maybe not adding it on top of your meal you're already doing because, you know, that's just excess calories. But, you know, definitely play around with it as a replacement for breakfast and see how your energy does. Currently, I'm usually just black coffee in the morning or a smoothie with some greens, a banana or berries, and maybe some chocolate protein powder. Blend that up with some ice and I'll have that, or just the black coffee.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And yeah, my wife and I, we do the bulletproof coffee pretty routinely, and yeah, we love it. And it sets the tone of, yeah, you just feel so full for so long. You don't have the noon cravings or even mid-afternoon cravings because that coffee's set the tone for you.
Yeah, you know, and you can really experiment with that recipe, you know, add in some like chocolate stevia or some vanilla extract and play around with that flavor, and you can really get it tasting good.
You mentioned the trail marathon. I want to kind of switch gears to some of the running and trail runs that you do and some of the strength training. And what's your favorite distance to race?
You know, I'm more of a shorter the better kind of guy, to be honest. I'd rather hurt a lot for a short amount of time than a little bit for a long amount of time. So I really like anything under an hour. Yesterday was pretty long for me, but you know, I toughed it out and came back with some blisters, but I'm alive.
Yeah, and hey, I love that because there's lately, yeah, there's the shift to the whole ultra scene and 50 miles, 100 miles, and even longer than
that.
You know,
I don't understand the whole obsession with everyone wants to run a marathon. You know, no one's excited. People are more excited over a 4-hour marathon than a 16-minute 5K.
Yep. Yeah, the tried and true 5K, 10K, there's beauty in that. Just going as hard as possible, redlining it for 15, 20 minutes, whatever it may be.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, I think that most people, just everyday runners, would be a lot healthier if they trained for shorter, faster things than trying to go the distance. I definitely don't think that it's healthy for most people to run a marathon, but I think if people were training for 5Ks, 10Ks, and half marathons, they'd be in a lot better place.
I totally agree with you there, and I think that another thing that goes along with that of training, you know, short, fast bursts, interval training, it can still build that aerobic conditioning. And another thing with that is the strength training component. So often I think endurance athletes and runners just slip into glute lifts and clamshells and some basic strength, but we need to put on some weight on the back too and do some back squats and deadlifts. And you incorporate those pretty routinely into your training, right?
Oh yeah. You know, I think that the running world and the, you know, strength and conditioning world are just two completely different planets, and they don't communicate, because what most runners are doing these days in the gym, it just makes me sad.
Yeah. You know, you see a 2:30 marathoner, like, you know, obviously great condition, and then the guy can't squat, or when he does box jumps, his knees are caving in and touching each other. And I just, it hurts me to watch that, to think how great of an athlete that person is, but they're going to be injured because they can't move and squat right.
Yeah. You know, and it's not even about, you know, maybe his performance, his marathon time would increase if you could make him squat 200 pounds. But even if not, I bet his chances of getting injured are going to be quite a bit lower if he can handle load on his back.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you do any sort of special mobility or flexibility to keep your body moving in the right movement patterns for squats and deadlifts to keep you healthy when you want to go run?
You know, there's really probably my main thing that I think that really keeps me mobile for my running and for my weightlifting is probably switching to minimalist shoes. I've been in flat shoes for probably the past, before I started running, 7 years. And I really attribute that to my ability to run pretty injury-free at this point. I got a nice deep squat and a great deadlift. So I think what a lot of people should start looking into is transitioning to minimalist shoes. And I say transitioning and not switching, because it's definitely a process. You know, most people are used to running in or just living in a shoe with, you know, an inch plus of a heel. They're basically walking around in high heels, and that shortens their heel cord, moves their back, changes their back position, and causes a whole bunch of downstream problems. So I think a major thing that would solve a lot of injuries in sports and endurance and anything would be switching to a more flat shoe.
Yeah, I totally agree. Sometimes we use the shoes as a band-aid to bigger problems. Even going back to how a runner who's a very elite runner can't squat. Well, they're wearing cushioned shoes that are covering up other issues, and then they blame it on the shoe when they're going to a minimalist shoe. It's like, well, you had functional issues going on there. So yeah, they need to transition, get the body right, and then, like you, they can run and be healthy.
Yeah, you know, it's not a sexy thing thinking you have to, you know, make it a practice and transition slowly. They just want to throw the shoes on and run, which is what caused most of people's problems switching to minimalist shoes.
Yeah, and so often as runners, we just get it into our mind of we can't stop running, and if we have a little ache or pain that we just go and buy a new pair of shoes or a different pair of shoes to kind of cover up the injury.
Yeah, that's just a band-aid, and then it'll get worse, and then you got to get a thicker shoe, and it doesn't end. You got to solve the root problem. You got to figure out what's causing that to begin with.
Yeah, and take us through a typical week of training with your strength training, your running, and anything else that you incorporate into a week.
Well, I'll explain to you what I think I'm going to be going into for my next phase of training. I'm going to be doing 3 days of weightlifting and just 3 days of running specific to a 5K training. So I'm going to be doing one day. My three running days will be a day of intensity on the track. So anything from, you know, 8 to 12 400s, 6 to 8 800s, 4 to 6 thousands, anywhere in there. And then a day of longer hill repeats. Which would probably means a trail run, you know, 3 miles warm up, do maybe a 3 to 5 minute trail uphill, jog that down, repeat that, you know, 2 to 4 times, and then probably a 3 mile cool down. And then my last workout would be a long run, which is probably going to be a trail run as well, which will be anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours out on the trail. And then my weightlifting is pretty simple. I think, you know, like I said, you know, runners overcomplicate things. They're doing weird little, you know, they're getting on the leg press. They're doing some glute work. They're doing lateral raises. They're just jumping around, and they're not really getting anything accomplished. Where I think most athletes in general need to focus on is the basic compound lifts. So what I'm going to be doing is just a back squat, an overhead press, and deadlifts. And I just do a very simple, I wave my loads over the week. I'll do a 3x5 at 75%, a 3x5, or a 3 to 5 set by 5 reps, depending on how I feel. I kind of auto-regulate just how I feel, you know, just kind of, I know how my body feels on the day. And if I feel like doing a little extra, I'll do a little extra. But I'll do that second week will be, you know, 3 to 5x5 at 85%. And then my third week will be like a 3x2 at 90 to 95%, and then I kind of repeat that cycle. Now, what that allows me to do, it's not really strenuous, but it allows me to practice the movements of the squat, the overhead press, and the deadlifts to really ingrain that, and then it still leaves me fresh to any workout that I need to do, running-wise.
I love that approach to the week. So are you going Monday run, Tuesday strength, or and then alternating the days there?
Yeah, that's what I usually like to do. Sometimes, you know, if I get busy, I'll throw like a rest day in between there. I'm not too hard fast on Monday. It needs to be a weightlifting day. I just kind of go with the flow. You know, if I get called in, I need to do a day of work. I'll do that. You know, if I'm late at school, then I'll push it around. But I like to do a weightlifting run, switching them off.
Yeah, and when a couple years ago when I incorporated a similar training program, I had amazing results just in my overall fitness, my running performance. I felt great, my body worked, and I'm sure, yeah, you're seeing similar results.
You know, if you're consistent with anything, you'll see results. That's what I've learned. So when I'm staying consistent, results follow.
Absolutely. So with I want to dial in on the strength stuff too a little bit. So you're following essentially kind of a 3 week cycle and then repeating that again the next 3 weeks, maybe adjusting weight as needed.
Yeah, it's kind of from trial and error, I've played around with many different styles of lifting, you know, a typical 5x5, strong lifts or starting strength, you know, they got 5-3-1, and then you get up into higher rep, you know, bodybuilding type stuff. But what I learned works best for me personally is something that doesn't take me to max fatigue every workout, like a 5x5 would, where, you know, you're doing 5x5 back squats, you know, you're pushing hard on every set, every last rep of every set is, you know, a max effort. But I found that I need to be, you know, I need to walk out of the gym feeling just as good or better than when I walked in.
Yeah, so true. And then when you start out with the back squat, you'll do those, say it's that 3 to 5x5 day. You'll do all sets on the back squat and then switch out, do the overhead press, and then finish with the deadlift. Is that how you approach it?
Yeah, so I'll do, you know, I usually do two. I'll have my working weight. So if I'm going to do a 3 to 5 at a 75% of my one rep max, so I'll warm up, say it's, you know, 135. I'll warm up. I'll do, 115 for probably 5, 125 for 5, and then I'll go into 135, and then I'll do 5 reps, wait 2 to 3 minutes, and then I'll do another 5, wait 2 to 3, wait another 5, and then I'll go on to my next, so my overhead press, for example, and then repeat the process. Do 2 warm-up, put my working weight on, do work out my reps, and then go on to my deadlift.
Yeah,
and then that would be and then I do the 3-week cycle. I wave my loads. I do a 75%, 85%, 95%, and then that just repeats back down to the 75%. So it naturally waves intensity where, an 85% week and the 95% week will be a little more intense. The 75% week brings the intensity back down. So I can even plan my endurance work so that week has maybe higher intensity endurance total with the lower weight total, and then as the weight intensity goes up, my running intensity can go down to follow.
Yeah, that's really smart training, and I love that approach because you're building all the different systems and you're building that overall fitness. And then what does your warm-up into that strength training workout look like?
I usually, if I'm feeling sore anywhere, I got a foam roller at home. I'll foam roll around. If you or the listeners haven't heard of Kelly Sarret, he has a couple good books. He's started as a CrossFit guy, but he's more of a mobility movement guy now. He created Mobility Wad, which I'm sure you've heard of him. But he has a couple good books, Ready to Run, which is specific towards runners, which I really recommend. I think it's really good. And then Becoming a Supple Leopard, which kind of walks you through all different kind of weightlifting movements and, kind of how to – if you're lacking in one form issue, then it teaches you how to fix that. So I just kind of use stuff like that and foam rolling to kind of warm me up. And then when I'm at the gym, I usually just warm up with the exercise that I'm doing, but with a lighter weight.
Okay, so you've done those mobility moves beforehand. And yeah, Kelly Starrett is he's a movement and mobility genius, and I think every runner, any endurance athlete, needs to read his book Ready to Run for sure, because it'll change
he is a
the
genius.
Mindset yeah it'll if people follow his stuff, there would be less injuries out there. Injuries are going to happen, but there would be fewer of them if they did his stuff.
People treat running like they're it's just a God-given talent, and you're born with it. But in this day and age, you really got to prepare yourself for what you're about to do when you go out and hit the pavement or the trail.
Yeah, so true. And yeah, if it is a God-given talent, and it is, but we still have a responsibility to take care of it too.
Yeah, one thing that actually Kelly Starrett talks about is how, six-year-olds, you go look at six-year-olds run at the park, they run beautifully. It's when you start putting them in big built-up shoes that everything falls apart. So you were God-given with the talent to run, but being stuck in, big built-up shoes for years and years of your life is taking it away from you.
Yeah, same goes for watching kids squat. Kids have perfect squat. When we set in office chairs and the lazy boy watching TV, our hip flexors get tight and our glutes don't work and we don't squat anymore.
Yeah, everything, it's the disease of modern living, I guess.
Yeah, and how many total miles do you put on between your speed day, your hill repeats, or that kind of longer interval day, and then your long run? How many miles are you getting in there?
I've probably been averaging around 30, 35 miles total in my past training. I've been doing a lot of when I was training for this trail half marathon, I was doing a lot of uphill walking, actually. So, mileage is sort of a mist, not really important there. But for time, I probably do between, 4 and 5 hours of endurance training. And then another, maybe 2.5 of with the late lifting.
Okay, so you're still getting some really good mileage in over the course of the week, and does your long run account for about a third of that then? Do you split them up evenly?
Yeah, you know, if I'm doing about a two-hour long run and I'm doing about 5 hours of training, that sounds about right, yeah.
And has anything inspired this approach to training, or do you write your own training programs, or how are you coming up with these little three-week cycles and overall cycles of training that you follow?
You know, I'm a voracious reader. A little dream of mine is to be a full-time coach, because I'm a mediocre athlete, but I feel like I just hunger for knowledge. So it's all just come from a trial and error on my part. I know that I want to do strength training and endurance at the same time. So I just have to trial and error of how to make it fit together. And recently I just feel like I'm really being able to connect dots and get something that gets me results.
Hey, you bet. More power to you, man, for breaking away from the traditional thinking from both sides, from the strength training side and the running and endurance side, because so often we're just drilled with this long, slow miles. If you want to run slow, run long, and do minimal strength training. And then on the flip side is, if you want to get strong, avoid the running and avoid all that stuff and just focus in. So more power to you, because I totally agree with your training approach, and I love it.
Yeah, you know, maybe if you want to be a 210 marathoner or deadlift 900 pounds, then you should probably really focus on one or the other. But for 99% of the population, there's a happy median, and it's a search every day to find that.
Yeah, you bet. Because, you still get the running in there. It's like if people just feel like they have to run, you're still getting that in there, but you're setting yourself up for, one, a lifetime of running and a lifetime of fitness, because you're building that strength now at a young age, because it's when you're 50 or 60, you're not going to be able to build the same strength that you're building now.
Yeah, the first thing to go, you know, in endurance running is your speed and your VO2 max. So you got to keep that up.
Within running, what's been your greatest memory that you've had through the years?
Greatest memory in running, you know? I did a Spartan race. I don't know if you're familiar, being in the CrossFit scene, I'm sure you've heard of Spartan races and Tough Mudders.
Yes,
I did a Spartan race in Hawaii last year. I did the Spartan Super in Hawaii. And it goes through, I got 24th. So that was that on its own, you know, was kind of exciting for me. But, you know, you're running through this, you run through where they film Jurassic Park. And that, you know, was just Hawaii, you know, it's just mind-blowing going through all of that. And it was just, you know, it started raining a little bit, and it was just kind of pure bliss running through there for a little bit.
That is cool. You didn't have any dinosaurs running around, though, or just the obstacles, huh?
Yeah, you know, thankfully I made it out alive.
Yeah,
I didn't
get
locked
cool.
in
that's
any
fun,
bathrooms
though.
And get eaten by T-Rex.
Yeah. And just within your running and your training, what's been a life lesson that you've taken away from that?
One thing that I've really learned recently is just really, you got to put in the work. You can dilly-dally and have all the dreams you want, but the only way anything is going to come true is if you actually put action into it and go for it. So once you learn that, the only thing between you and the person that doesn't do it is that you put in the action, you put in the work, then that really motivates you.
Yeah, so true. That's really good stuff. Yeah, if you have a goal to set a PR, or maybe it's break 2 hours and a half marathon, or qualify for Boston, or even to have a six pack, whatever it may be, it takes time, and it's going to take work consistently over time to get there.
Yeah, if it was easy, everyone would do it, and you have to learn to love the journey getting there. And, you know, personally, I it almost makes me, as bad as this sounds, you know, knowing that I'm putting in work that most other people just wouldn't dream of doing, and they would quit if they knew what I went through every day to train for things. And knowing that really helps push me forward.
Yeah, and then, yeah, as it relates to life, of if you're starting a business or just even going to work every day, it's not going to be easy, but it takes time. And you're not going to be CEO overnight or fresh out of college or wherever it may be.
Yep, but you're not going to be at all if you don't put in the work and put the effort towards it.
Yeah, most definitely. What if a new runner meets you out on the trail and asks for a piece of advice? What do you tell them?
Well, along with the putting in the work, I would say stay consistent. You know, I wouldn't give them any diet advice unless they ask for it. I would just say, you know, whatever, find a plan, find a goal, and make that your focus. Push towards it. Have a goal and finish it. What I told myself way back, you know, I set my first goal and I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to finish it. And if I hated the process, I'm never going to do it again. But I'll know because I put in the work and I found out I didn't like it. I never have to ask what if. I would know at that point. So I would just tell them, you know, put in the work, be consistent, and it'll pay off.
Yeah, there's power in a good goal that keeps us motivated to stay consistent and to keep pushing forward, but also to find that sustainable rhythm and pattern within training, something that works for you. And yeah, it sounds like you've really found that sweet spot with your mix of strength and running, and just something that works for you, your schedule, your family, and other obligations that you have going on.
Yeah, you know, no one plan works for everyone. You got to experiment. Don't feel too tied down by, you know, conventional things. Experiment, play around. Only you know you best. So figure out what works for you and don't be afraid to try new things.
Yeah, that experiment part is something that we need to think about, because yeah, you can do a 6-week, just try out a new little training, tweak your training just a little bit, add in those squats and deadlifts and presses, or maybe if you don't have experience with it, ease into it or whatever it may be, but just experiment with different training styles. I would love that for the whole running community.
Yeah, you know, people are afraid of change and doing things. I was that way, you know. I, like I said, you know, I'm a voracious reader. I would read. I would learn all about, you know, the periodization, the different plans. I would figure out, you know, what I think would be the best one. But, you know, it's not the best one if I don't follow it. And inevitably, I wouldn't end up following it. And there's no point in, you know, finding the best plan if you're not going to follow it. So you really just have to, you know, say, what the heck, you know, try something new. You know, you're not going to go anywhere unless you add something or take something away.
So true. Yeah, sometimes we can get caught up in all the details and it's like, oh, the scientific research behind this training plan is great, but you need to do it, and doing the work is more important than this scientific research behind the plan.
Yeah, you know what it really comes down to is finding out what you will do. You know, if you can't run 5 days a week, that doesn't mean don't run at all. It means if you can run 2 days a week, 2 days a week is infinitely better than none.
Yeah, sometimes you have, it's like, well, I can't put in 50 miles a week, or I can't run a marathon. Well, yeah, you can run a couple of days a week and eventually you can run a marathon.
Yeah, you know, there's an old saying, I don't know who said it, but don't let perfect get in the way of great, or don't let great get in the way of good. Don't let the potential of doing the best thing get in the way of you actually doing something that's good. That's why I like having, you know, doing both lifting and running, because I can buckle down and, you know, go out and do a couple runs every week. And, well, it may not be the best thing. It may not be as good as doing a structured plan. You know, I'm weightlifting. It keeps my mind off of the fact that I'm not doing a perfect plan. It keeps my mind preoccupied from, you know, wandering off into what I should be doing running instead of what I will do.
Yeah, and another question with the strength training that I had for you too is, do you add any, some people might call it accessory lifts, or any core work for the runner's standpoint on top of your three foundational movements?
You know, I'd say it's definitely beneficial. I have an ab wheel that I roll out on a couple days a week. You could do, I do leg lifts at the gym. Core work is pretty good, you know, for runners. I've noticed that it really helps me with side stitches. I used to get side stitches quite a bit, and core work is really helping me out. But other than any other accessory work, again, you know, I think that your gym work, if your goal is running, your work in the gym should only complement that. And that's why I think the small amount of core lifts really give you the best bang for your buck. You know, I can be in and out of the gym. If I superset some warm-ups, I can be in and out of there in 30, 35 minutes and had a great workout.
Yeah, that's really good stuff. And Sean, this was awesome talking about nutrition and the fat adapted and the strength training. And if people want to find you online, how can they connect with you?
Well, you can. The only social media I really have is my Instagram. I am, I'm either Butterrunner or The Butterrunner. Let me double check that for you. But you can also, if you need to email me, if you want to email me about anything, have any nutrition training questions or anything, you can get me at TheButterrunner@gmail.com. And my Instagram is Butterrunner@gmail.com or Butterrunner on Instagram.
That sounds great. Well, hey, Sean, thanks so much, and good luck in your training coming up. I'm excited to watch your journey and see where you go.
No problem. Thanks for having me on. It's been a blast.
To connect with Sean, you can find all of the links in the show notes at usaendurance.com/027. Thanks for listening, and until next time, lace up those shoes, hit the trail, and train hard. Thank you for listening to the Freedom to Run podcast. If you're ready to take your training to the next level and reach your running and fitness goals, we invite you to join the USA Endurance community at usaendurance.com.